What's going on in America's public schools? What were once cherished local institutions for education and growth increasingly seem to be at the front lines of the culture wars. So what does your average parent or student do to survive? Here to help are Jennifer Berkshire and Jack Schneider, authors of the new book, The Education Wars, A Citizen's Guide and Defense Manual. Jennifer is a freelance journalist, and Jack is a scholar of education. Together, they host the education podcast, Have You Heard? Here they are to share five of their big ideas.
I'm Jennifer Berkshire. I'm a freelance journalist.
And I'm Jack Schneider. I'm a professor of education.
And together, we are the authors of the new book, The Education Wars, A Citizen's Guide and Defense Manual. The first thing you're going to learn when you read our book is that we have been fighting about schools for a long time. Jack, you're the education historian. Take it away. Insight number one, we have been fighting about schools for a long time.
There's nothing new about the fact that Americans fight over the schools. Our schools are the way that we advance our values as a society. They are how we advance opportunity for individuals. And they're a place where we disagree about matters like what kind of history should be taught or the role of religion in schools. One doesn't have to go too far back to find culture wars in the schools that seemed as if they were going to engulf public education entirely, but never did. So we can go back to the Cold War. We can go back a little bit further to fights over evolution. We can go back to the evolution of the public education system when there were arguments about whether the Protestant Bible should be used or who should be included in the schools. Over time, however, what we've found is that these disagreements have largely resolved themselves through democratic processes and an underlying faith in the public education system itself.
Insight number two, we're fighting over schools today because we're fighting about everything. We're incredibly polarized into warring camps of red and blue, and our faith in all kinds of institutions, the media, the Supreme Court, as well as our public schools, is way down. The intersection of those two things, polarization and mistrust, means that we now view education and the quality of our public schools through a partisan lens. If you're a Democrat, for example, you're far more likely to have confidence in our schools than if you're a Republican. Another key reason we're fighting so intensely over schools right now is that we no longer agree on what the point of it is. If we climb into our time machines and go back a couple of hundred years, the purpose of public education was pretty clear. If our self-governing democracy was going to survive, then we needed schools that could produce democratic citizens. Over the past 30 years, we settled on a different and, frankly, much narrower purpose: workforce preparation. The point of school is to prepare kids for work. Well, now we're in a moment of intense disagreement over the why of K-12 education. Do we want schools that train young patriots? Or is it better for kids to learn the whole story of America, warts and all? Should schools teach kids to think for themselves? Or should they pass along the culture and values that parents think are most important? These are all big questions, and right now, we don't agree on the answers to any of them.
Our third insight is that this time, our fights over our schools are different, because this time we're fighting about whether or not we should have a public education system at all. Prior culture war in the schools and prior disagreements about what schooling should look like fundamentally accepted the premise of public education. That's why more than 90% of American school-age children are enrolled in public schools. Americans like their public schools. But this time, there's a different idea on the table, and it's lurking just beneath the culture war that seems like it is the main event. But the main event is actually something pretty different. It's a radical idea that was advanced roughly half a century ago by free market economist Milton Friedman. The idea was that instead of funding schools with our tax dollars and allowing any child in the neighborhood to attend, that we would provide vouchers to families, and schools would operate largely on a free market model. Eventually, those vouchers would be reduced in value, and that people would pay largely out of pocket for the education that they wanted their children to have. It's a vision that had very little political support. In fact, a highly popular president, Ronald Reagan, who was himself an acolyte of Milton Friedman's, advanced the idea in the 1980s and found that it was so politically unpopular that he moved on to other pursuits, like firing the nation's air traffic controllers. Since then, an ideologically committed core of policy elites has been working to lay the groundwork for the moment that we presently find ourselves in. They built policy power, they built a legislative apparatus, and most importantly, they built bipartisan consensus with the Democratic Party, often unwittingly, around the idea that choice is something that Americans should embrace in public education, and in fact, that the main mission of public education is to advance an individual's values, aims, and social mobility. While supporters of choice in the Democratic Party saw policy alternatives like charter schools as a kind of lasting peace, the ideologically committed policy elites on the right, people like Donald Trump's Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, saw that as a way station to the long-term aim of private school vouchers and a fully marketized system of education, one in which there would be no system at all, but only, as she puts it, dollars in the backpack.
Which brings us to insight number four. If we lose public education in this country, we're not getting it back. I want you to join me in a little thought experiment here. Imagine a candidate for office running on a platform of universal free public schools from kindergarten through 12th grade, schools that everyone gets to go to, no matter the color of their skin or whether they have a disability or even whether they're a citizen of this country or not. Oh, and we're going to tax ourselves to pay for this system. Imagine the reception that that candidate would get. I'm guessing he or she would be called a socialist or something worse. So if the stakes are so high, why does it seem so hard for us to defend our public schools? Well, that's because our expectations of what schools should do are really high. We want them to solve huge systemic problems like poverty and inequality. And when they can't, well, our outsized expectations for what schools can do leads to outsized disappointment when they fail to deliver. Think about how often you've heard some version of this argument. You may have even made it yourself. The system is failing. It's getting worse every year, and we're falling behind other countries. Better to just wash our hands of the whole thing. In fact, beating up on the public schools is practically a national pastime. And this has been true for a long time, ever since a landmark Reagan-era report called A Nation at Risk came out, warning that a rising tide of mediocrity was overtaking the schools. Today, the narrative that our schools are failing is practically a religion. And that conviction that public education is a failure makes it hard for us to acknowledge that public education is actually one of the great American success stories, as we argue in the book. Today, the entire project of free, taxpayer-supported, democratically run public schools hangs in the balance, and with it, any possibility that we'll realize the potential of a multiracial democracy. And yet, people aren't pouring into the streets in outrage. After a half century of beating up on the schools, we're having a hard time making the case that public schools are worth saving at all.
Our last insight, in a book with the subtitle A Citizen's Guide and Defense Manual, is that if we want to protect and preserve public education, we can't fight fire with fire. Ultimately, there is no way to win the culture war. Culture war is designed to sow seeds of distrust and resentment. And that's a part of the political plan. If you want to sell something like private school vouchers to the American people, the lesson over time has been, don't do it directly. Whenever private school vouchers have been on the ballot, they've lost, often overwhelmingly so. But if you can sow seeds of distrust and resentment, if you can convince the American people that the public schools they have so long supported have gone off the rails, if you can convince them that they can no longer work with their neighbors and that their tax dollars are being misused by the public schools in the form of things like indoctrination of young people, then maybe it no longer makes sense to continue carrying out this experiment that we've been engaged in for the past century and a half. The culture war, in that sense, is just a means to an end. And so engaging in it in any way advances that further purpose of privatizing education. The way to fight fire in this case isn't with fire, it's with fire extinguishers. And we end the book by talking through what Americans can do to advance the democratic aims of public education, to build broad-based bipartisan coalitions in support of public schools, and to fully embrace the public mission of schooling.
So if you have found yourself wondering what is all the fighting about the schools right now, we hope that you'll check out our new book, The Education Wars, A Citizen's Guide and Defense Manual.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Jennifer and Jack. That was Jennifer Berkshire and Jack Schneider with five big ideas from The Education Wars, A Citizen's Guide and Defense Manual. I'm Michael Kopnat. Have a great day.